Today, I'd like us to think about the word that's on the screen. You may have tried to already think about the pronunciation of it, and it is pronounced. Let's go back just a bit. It's pronounced epistemology. Epistemology. Now, we normally don't try to pronounce things together, but today I'd like for us to see, maybe to reinforce it in our minds. Let's see if we can pronounce this word together. Ready? One, two, three. Epistemology. All right, now that we can pronounce it, somebody says, well, what on earth does that mean? I've never heard of the word before. Well, let's take a look. PowerPoint is doing some strange things. Okay. It's just really not good. All right, here we go. Epistemology. It is the investigation of what distinguishes justified belief from opinion. So far, so good. As you think about epistemology in terms of religion or in Christianity, we certainly want to distinguish belief from opinion. But on this slide, you'll notice that there's something at the bottom. It is in red. It is street epistemology. And if you're not familiar with street epistemology, it's something that you do need to be familiar with. This is a technique that is fairly recent. It's a few years old, and it's being used by a number of atheists. It is, as you look at street epistemology, it is a technique which, as you break it down, it resembles in many respects the way that Christians try to take the gospel to people. This morning I want to think about street epistemology because we are thinking about the book of 2 Peter. In 2 Peter, he, especially in chapter 2, talks about false teachers. When someone calls my attention to a false teacher, and perhaps this is true for you as well, I do not immediately think about someone who is religious as far as being a false teacher. I normally do not associate atheism with false teachers. I'm thinking about someone who's religious. If we think about atheism, though, it is a religion that is common, and it certainly does qualify as far as being a false teacher. Atheists in the past have been somewhat clever, but with this street epistemology, they've gotten even more clever. Let's delve a little more deeply into it. Okay. As you look at street epistemology, it is a conversational technique introduced by an assistant professor back about 6 years ago in 2013. You can look at that link and find some more information about it online. There are a lot of websites that talk about it, but it is something that is a growing trend in society. There are people who are actually doing this right now, and the teaching technique is one that is being relied on in many respects by some hardcore atheists. If you meet up with a street epistemologist, and they're out there, and you're not prepared for their brand of atheism, you might be shocked. Maybe less shocked as an older person, but certainly greatly shocked as a younger person. I want to give you just little by little some more information about this as far as some of the slides, if we can get our PowerPoint to cooperate. This street epistemology, it works best in one-on-one conversations. They are certainly willing to do it in other ways, but if they can engage you in a one-on-one conversation, this is the first choice. He talks about how where both participants can apply their full attention to what the other is trying to say. That sounds a lot like a Bible study. You're trying to communicate with a non-Christian and share with them. There's that going back and forth as far as information that's being expressed. Although direct real-world encounters are most efficient, people are also experimenting with other mediums such as video chat, online text forums, and having some success. This is a big, big thing. Going on to our next slide, you may be wondering, well, how would a street epistemologist work? What exactly are the techniques? Well, here's exactly how it works. Number one, they want to build rapport with their prospect. They want to get to know somebody a little bit better. Now, you might be an adult, and you might be thinking, well, that would never work on me. I'm too old, and I'm too set in my ways. I'd never buy into that set of beliefs. Good luck with me. Well, that very well might be true. But the street epistemologist, he's interested in your kids. He's interested in your grandkids. He or she is interested in your great-grandchildren. As you look at this new breed of atheism, the people who are promoting it, the proponents of it, they are very, very committed. As you start looking at this step-by-step guide, in addition to building rapport with the prospect, they want to identify the claim. And what they mean by that is that they want to understand exactly what you believe. They want to know what your convictions are. And that is exactly what we find in the scriptures, isn't it? When you look at Peter in Acts chapter 2, what was he doing? He was dealing with people as far as where they were spiritually. He was trying to understand their mindset about Jesus, and that's where he began with them. As you look at Acts chapter 8, what do you find? You find that the preacher, Philip, goes to the Ethiopian eunuch and he understands where he is. He understands the conviction that he has, having that conviction of being someone who had gone to worship in Jerusalem. You find in Acts chapter 10, once again, an understanding of the conviction. Cornelius is a good man. He's trying to do what's right. Peter understands that, and that's where Peter begins to talk with him. The building of rapport, the identifying of the claim, that's exactly how Christianity functions. These are now two of the techniques being used by these street epistemologists. The people who are involved with this activity will often look for people who are involved with some kind of religion and make a religious claim. For instance, if you are out and someone makes a claim about a miracle happened in my family, there was this healing or there was this miraculous activity over here, the street epistemologist hears that and is thinking, aha, here is a chance, here is an opportunity for me to promote my atheism. Here is a chance for me to initiate a discussion. This is a golden opportunity. The same is true if someone says, well, my church is doing. The street epistemologist has his antenna up and is thinking this is one more chance. Here is another opening to discuss atheism with this person. Another person says, well, in our church bulletin this week, another individual says, well, this person became a Christian. All of those things serve as an opportunity. Building a relationship with someone and understanding what people believe, those are two of the key things that we do as Christians to help people come to an understanding of the gospel. Claim number three, or point number three, is confirming the claim. A street epistemologist, if you talk to one, that individual wants to know all about what you believe, your claims. If you believe that there are UFOs coming from Mars, most people might write you off as nuts. I'll tell you this, though, the street epistemologist will listen to you. He or she will listen to you because they want to share their brand of atheistic thought. If you believe in some type of God, the street epistemologist will believe in you as far as listening to what you have to say. I want to know what your belief is. You believe that your God is a rock, a stick, a stone? You believe in the God of the Bible? Whatever, whoever your God is, you tell me. I want to hear what you have to say. And do not be surprised if, as you talk to one of these characters, they begin to write down what you say. I want to clearly understand what you have to tell me. So let's just write it down to make sure that there are no misunderstandings. I do a similar thing. When I talk to people about the gospel of Christ, I have a noble reason. I want to have the person tell about their religious experience or their spiritual condition. And then after they lay that out, go to the Bible and see what Scripture has to say. That way we can determine whether or not the Bible matches up with their experience or their beliefs. It's not some type of trick. If you deal with the street epistemologist, though, they have some other intentions in mind. As you look at the traits or the practices, the little manual that these people have, you begin to find that the street epistemologist will ask a person, in the case of a Christian, do you believe the Bible? And a lot of people will say yes. If the person says, yes, I do believe the Bible, or I do believe that there is a God who gave us the Bible, more probing questions might be answered. And this next step that we see as far as clarifying definitions is something that we do as well. If I'm in a religious discussion with someone and a person says, I believe the Bible, that statement may or may not be consistent with what I mean when I say I believe the Bible. They might believe the Bible in accepting a few books. They might say a few books in their mind do not belong in the Bible. Or when a person says, I believe in God, which God do you believe in? Or a person says, we're saved by faith. Define the word faith for me. What do you mean? The street epistemologists, they know the value, the importance of that to have an effective discussion. If you are therefore in a discussion with one of these characters, they will probably ask you to define key words. If you say that you believe that there is life in outer space, they may want to know what life means to you. Does life mean an amoeba? Or are you talking about intelligent life that can travel between planets and so forth? If you believe in God, the street epistemologist may ask you to define your God. They may ask you what you mean when you say the Bible is true. They may ask you about truth. Do you believe in truth? Does truth exist? They may ask you if we can know truth. They may ask if we can prove truth. They may ask us how we can know that something is true, since we say it's true. Agreeing on words, what they mean, that is important for discussion. Even the Bible has information on the fact that people have not always agreed on what certain words or ideas mean. God had his standard for righteousness. The Jews came along and they had a different standard for righteousness. And God was not pleased by that. But they were not using righteousness in the same sense. Now, I cite this point and really all these points on the slide to show you that the new atheists, the training, the attention that they give to detail is critical. If you talk to a street epistemologist, I am telling you, it's going to be like being in a street fight if you're not unprepared. These people, as they talk to individuals, especially young people, they come prepared and they play for keeps. It is almost as if they see their atheism as a spiritual war. They do everything they can to arm themselves with the very best tools. Now, at this point, you might be thinking this sounds a lot like a Christian talking to someone, and that's true. But at this point, the street epistemologist takes a radical turn. They will ask people about their confidence level. If you believe in the Bible, if you believe that God exists, if you believe that there is a heaven or hell, how confident are you? And they'll generally associate that question with a scale. From 0 to 100, how confident are you in your spiritual belief? If someone ever asks you something like that, put your belief on a scale from 0 to 100, watch out. Watch out. That is a major red flag that's usually designed to be a clever trick. Here's why I say that. Imagine one of these fellas, the street epistemologist, having the opportunity to create a relationship, building rapport with a young Christian teen. A discussion comes up, the young Christian says something about attending services, and the street epistemologist hears that. And upon hearing that, sees an opportunity and asks the teen some questions, starts to build rapport. Well, the teen, unsuspecting, thinks, well, here is an opportunity to share my faith. I want to do a good work for God, so I'm going to talk to this person. And the individual says, yeah, I want to know more about your faith. Tell me about your God. Tell me about the Bible. Tell me about your worship. Tell me about your faith. And after they've done all those four steps, then they begin to set the hook. The street epistemologist says, you know, if you could just put your faith on a scale of 0 to 100, how on that scale from 0 to 100, how confident are you that the Bible is true? What Dean says, I'm 100% sure. How positive are you that God exists? Oh, once again, I am 100% sure. The unsuspecting teen, like an innocent lamb, makes those statements, and then they are lined up for an attack from the rear. A subtle attack begins. If you are 100% sure that God exists, or even 97%, how do you know? If there's zero doubt, or almost zero doubt, how can you be so certain about the Bible? How can you be so certain about your faith? How can you be so certain about heaven and hell? How can you be so certain that these other religions are not what your God wants? That question is used then to begin putting some doubt in the person's mind. Now, this wouldn't, I think, be true for us, but I'll give you another related illustration. Suppose a person in receiving those questions says, well, I know this person was healed. There was prayer for the person, and the person was healed. Well, the person who is the street epistemologist might say, what if we have an atheist who doesn't believe in prayer? The doctor said there were no hope for him, but he was healed. How would that relate to your faith? Or you reject the faith of Hinduism or Buddhism or some of the other isms, and you say that those religions are not right as far as your God is concerned, but those people pray, and there are healings with those faiths as well. The street epistemologist, after a person has offered a confidence level, will come in and begin to attack in various ways the level of confidence. If that Christian, young or old, is not prepared to defend the faith, and we can be, but if that person is not prepared to defend the faith, the atheist is beginning to chip away at the foundation. A lot of people are not prepared to to defend the faith. And that doubt, even though it may be small, is injected into the mind. After that encounter finishes, the atheist steps back, says goodbye for now. They want to make sure that they've listened. They want to make sure that they've summarized what has taken place with that person. They want to make sure that they've asked a sufficient number of questions. They've watched the person's reaction. Were we able to create some doubt? Were we able to put some uncertainty into the person's mind? They've repeated the process. And now they're going to step back and assess what happened. That's very similar to conducting a Bible study with someone. At that point, the atheist has probably asked the person at the end, are you still 100% certain about the God you believe in? Are you still 100% certain about the Bible? And in some cases, the person will say yes. But in some other cases, the person will say, well, maybe I'm not so sure. Well, as the atheist thinks about how things went, they're also looking at, did we get into an argument that wasn't productive? Was the person partially receptive? Can we set up another opportunity to study? There are a lot of online articles about street epistemology and street epistemologists. Right now, there is a call that is being sent out for at least 10,000 street epistemologists. There are people in our world who want to fill our land with not just people who believe in atheism, but there are people out there who want to put atheist evangelists out in every city, every corner of our country and the world. There is a really good chance that some of the people in here, young or old, will be encountering one or more of these people. For today, as we think about this, I know it's just scratching the surface, but I want to leave you with a very simple, but a critically important point. If someone ever comes along and asks you to put your faith in God or your faith in Bible on a scale, they say, well, give me a percent from 0 to 100, and what's your level of certainty? If somebody ever does that to you, the one thing that I want you to take away from this sermon is this. I want you to ask them, explain to me the difference between the numbers on your scale. For instance, if I've been asked that question, I would ask, what's the difference between 10 and 11 on your scale of 0 to 100? Or another set of numbers, what's the difference between 34 or 35? How do I know if something would be 79 or 80? How do I know if something would be 97 or 98? Explain to me your scale. And the atheist is going to step back and say, well, I've never been asked that question before. I don't know. That scale is smoke and mirrors. It is not a certainty scale. And once that question has then been put back on them, you're able to go and defend the faith. Long ago, Peter talked about false teachers, and as Peter talked about false teachers, he said that they are going to be very, very sneaky. Take a look at this information from 2 Peter chapter 2. He said they're going to exist. He said false prophets were in existence, and he said, I want you to know that they're going to be false teachers. 2 Peter 2:1. He said these false teachers, they're going to bring in destructive heresies. He said in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 2 that there are going to be a lot of people, many people will follow these individuals. Not talking necessarily about atheists, but people who are involved with some form of false doctrine. He said when it comes to these individuals, they're going to talk about the right way. And they're going to say evil, they're going to say bad things about it, verse 2. He said they're going to be daring. He said they're going to be self-willed. He said they're not going to have any fear, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 10. Well, that sure sounds like some of the stuff we're looking at today. He said they're going to be people without reason, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12. That also is related today. He said they're going to entice some people who are unsteadfast souls, verse 14. He said they will have forsaken the right way, verse 15. He said they will be like springs, but they'll not have any water. He said they're going to utter great and swelling words. Oh, that's so true. He said they're going to promise liberty while they are the bondservants of slaves and corruption. Christians need to be ready to give an answer for their hope. Peter talked about that in his first book, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15. I will tell you with all my being that, folks, there is a new brand of atheism in town, and it is completely unlike what people in the past have experienced. We've got to be better prepared to defend the gospel with these people. If you meet up with one of these people, don't back down. If we've got the truth, and we do, don't hesitate to tangle with him or her. And one of the best ways to do that as far as initiating the discussion is to challenge that scale. Take the offensive. Defend the truth. and show them why, when we talk about the Bible, it is a book from God, it is a book that's true, there is a heaven and hell, all people are going to spend eternity in one of those two places. And Christ will, at the end of time, judge all people. If we've got the truth, and we do, never cower, never step back, never be afraid, young or old. We may not always successfully defend the truth the first time around, but we can be better prepared the second time or the third time. God's word is right. It is the path to salvation. We talked about that in our class this morning. It is God's power to salvation, Romans 1 and verse 16. And folks, I'm here to affirm that every single word in it is true. It can be defended. We can defend. We can prove that God exists, that Christ did die. He died for the sins of mankind. He is coming back. He will judge the world, and all people are accountable to him. If you don't believe those things, we'd like to talk to you. If you do believe those things, but you've not yet entered into Christ where salvation is, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 10, this morning you can do that. You can confess that you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. You can say to that old life of sin, I want to be through with that. And now this morning, I want to be baptized into Christ. I'm going to be like the man in Acts chapter 22 and verse 16. He arose, he was baptized, he washed away his sins, and he began to live the Christian life. This morning, if you have that conviction, live it. And if you don't have that conviction, and this morning you want to start heading in that way, we invite you to do that now as we stand and sing a selected song.